gives me a great pleasure to say welcome to Andrew Jones live in the studio. How are you, mate?
Really well, Michael. Thanks for having me.
It's been a big festival of racing and a successful festival of racing with what we've been able to see achieved. Overall, your take on the last couple of months?
With one obvious caveat, we're really, really happy. We're really happy with the racing schedule. We're really happy to have a 7-week festival of racing rather than a 6-week festival. We really like the timing of February into March and the start of footy season. We think the new timing of the Australian Cup worked really well. And next week it'll be an extra week after the All-Star Mile, but noting that the winner of the Australian Cup came out of the All-Star Mile and Cascadian and Pounding, who came third, also backed up. So that sequencing has worked really well from a racing pattern point of view. And the quality of the fields and the quality of the races themselves has been really, really high. And we've seen that through our engagement figures on track and wagering.
The caveat is obviously the number of falls. And there's been so much discussion about that, the shocking injuries to Jamie Carr, also Ethan Brown. And we've seen most recently also Blake McDougall as well. We know Craig Williams suffered terrible injuries as well. I want to ask you about yesterday, the penalties that were handed down on the Ethan Brown fall. Mark Zara, 36 meetings. Blake Shin, 10 meetings. So essentially it's about a month penalty for Mark Zara. Blake Shin, 10 meetings is just under 2 weeks. So what's your gut feel about that? When you've got a jockey who could be on the sidelines for 6 months, a serious fall, horses in a premier race, is that penalty in commensurate with what you think it should have been?
Look, I wouldn't dare to second guess stewards who've been doing this stuff for 25 plus years. I think the principle is safe racing is the goal, safe and competitive racing. So if there's dangerous racing as a product of, for example, careless riding, there needs to be a proper disincentive to ride carelessly. And I think the penalty handed down in that case to Mark Zara in particular, you know, is a pretty heavy penalty, and I think that seems reasonable to me.
Overall, if we take individuals out of it and individual occurrences, is there enough deterrent for jockeys to stop them taking maybe added risks when there is such huge prize money on offer in the biggest races?
Yeah, it's a good question, and jockeys can answer that for themselves. The biggest disincentive is to, or the biggest incentive is not to fall off the horse and injure yourself. Obviously, riding dangerously is the most dangerous to the rider themselves, and they all want to get home safely, and they also want to get across the line in one piece with a chance of winning the race. And so, you know, that's the biggest incentive or disincentive to ride carelessly. And then the penalties for careless riding, interference, etc., are probably the second incentive or disincentive.
So you're happy with the level of penalties that we have?
I think so. I mean, that's for the stewards to judge ultimately, and so they've been doing it for a long time. And then you've also got a very rigorous judicial process where if jockeys think the penalty is too severe, they can appeal it to the Victorian Racing Tribunal, which Blake Shin, for example, has done. So he feels 10 meetings is too harsh, and so he's asked for an independent ruling on that via the VRT. So if the stewards levy penalties that are found to be excessive by the VRT, then they get scaled back. So it's about striking a fair balance of, I guess, penalising and disincentivising dangerous riding or careless riding, and also offering due process to jockeys and making sure you've got penalties that are going to stand up through a tribunal.
A lot of discussions, and we don't want to see what T.O., Ethan and Jamie Carr are going through at the moment at all. But it is a dangerous sport and accidents do happen. But from the investigations, the analysis that you and your team would have done, what do you put the recent spate of falls down to?
The incidents need to be analysed separately, and I would characterise the inquiry that's been concluded, the Zara Shin Ethan Brown inquiry, as a 3 into 2 dozen go. There were sort of three horses going for two gaps, so that didn't quite work. And then the other two, the findings remain to be found because we haven't had the chance to speak to Jamie or Teo yet. But it looks like essentially the horse behind has clipped the heels of the horse in front. And so they're incidents that are particular to those races. The fact they've happened 3 weeks in a row, is there a broader pattern? We're not sure that there is. We think that, you know, it's statistical variation essentially, but obviously we're looking at to see if there's a thread that connects them together and allows us to take greater preventative action in what you say is a sport that's has a high level of inherent risk.
One of the threads that's been put up by Ben Mellum and other participants is fatigue and the 24/7 cycle, which is not new. But maybe the proliferation of night racing, twilight racing. Where do you sit with that argument?
Well, the first thing to say is fatigue is an entirely separate issue in our view. So there's the race falls and they need to be considered on their merits. Fatigue is a separate issue and it's a whole of industry strategy issue, really. And it's important to start from a strong fact base. Not just a strong opinion base. So the volume of racing in Victoria has actually come back a little bit. We race less than we did 15 years ago, about 25 fewer meetings than 15 years ago. And the level of night racing has actually also come back a bit versus 3 or 4 years ago. So we don't think there have been major changes in that regard. From a racing scheduling point of view, we need to put racing on where fans want to watch it. And we're a leisure and an entertainment product or service, and fans want to watch racing and are available to watch racing when they're not working. And that, for the vast majority of people, will mean later in the day, later in the week. And if you look at the way a round of AFL is scheduled, for example, that gives you a sense of when fans are available to watch. So they schedule Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday through the day, into the night, and Sunday likewise. They take a couple of days off, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then they go again. So the long-term shape of the racing schedule will reflect what fans want to watch and are available to watch. And then it's about finding the right balance for participants, particularly trainers, stable staff and jockeys, probably in that order. The jockeys via the Jockeys Association have been very, very strong on giving their members the right to choose when and where they race, and to give their senior members — apprentices are a little bit different — to give their senior members the ability to pick and choose and regulate their working hours to maximise their income and progress their careers. And the facts show that they mostly do that. The busiest 5% of riders ride four and a bit times per week. The top 50 ride a little less than four times a week, and the top 100 average a little less than three times a week in Victoria. So there's nothing that we've seen in the data that suggests excessive workloads, and there's certainly nothing that suggests that they've led to a systematic issue with racing incidents. All that said, to the extent that fatigue is an issue in the industry, to me, the real issue is not racing later. The real issue is starting earlier. So we finish a little earlier on Thursdays than Fridays, for example. We finish sort of 8:45, around that zone, on a Thursday night. That's not a particularly late night. If you're at home on the couch, that's not late to be watching TV. It's not late for a footy player to be playing. Yes, the horses have to get home, the staff have to get home, but it's not a super late night. Where the fatigue comes in is when you have to get up at 3 o'clock the next morning. And to us, the structural solution for this industry over a period of time is to shift training times later in the morning so people get more rest. And that has a second benefit, which is really important, which is making the industry more attractive to staff. So as an example, I had a quick chat to Catherine Coleman on Saturday at Flemington and asked her what time she gets up. She gets up at 2:45 a.m. Mm. I'm not even sure that's the morning, that's the night. And yeah, if you say to an 18-year-old, would you like to come to a job that starts at 2:45 a.m? Some will say yes, but a lot will say absolutely not. So shifting to later training times in the morning, I think is something that will make the industry a lot more attractive, and we're already seeing that via a trial at Ballarat.
So, and Tony McAvoy said, we want to implement this permanently. They're waiting on it being ticked off by the race club. How do you ensure that this occurs then? How do you get Pakenham and Cranbourne? The VRC, which is very difficult because how do they get their works done as well? And so, you know what? Training starts at 5 a.m. It doesn't start at 3:30. How do you do that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, the first step is to make a decision that you think that's the right answer. And obviously, as you can tell, we've more or less done that. Secondly, is to see if we can get it trialled. And we asked a number of race clubs to trial, and Ballarat was good enough under Belinda Glass to take us up. The reception from the trainers and staff has been really, really positive, and they've wanted to keep the new training hours rather than revert to the old ones. And so then it's about solving the practical problems of how you get track work done, what time you start the race meeting, so trainers and jockeys and float drivers and so forth still have time to get from A to B. But we control the race time, so we can fix that, which we'll do at Ballarat by starting to race a little later. And then there's some practical issues about staffing of track maintenance. But, you know, in my view, you shape the industry around the fans first, then the participants, and then the, you know, the tradies looking after the grass and capital works. They need to fit around the participants in the industry.
So what's your time frame? In 12 months, 24 months, will we be looking at a Victorian-wide training industry that starts at what time is the optimum time, do you think? 5 o'clock?
Yeah, it's really for the participants to make their own judgments, and the pace of change will be depend a little bit. There'll be a little bit of push from us, but also a little bit of pull from the trainers, and that's what we've seen at Ballarat. And you know, one of the Flemington trainers has now raised it with Matt Welsh, saying, you know, can we try it at Flemington too? Cranbourne would like to run a trial. They've just got some constraints with some works being done there. Pakenham, hopefully, will have a crack once the uphill track is finished. So, you know, once word gets around, you know, that you start to create a case for change. Now, of course, there is a set of trainers that would prefer to keep it as is. You know, they've got a setup that works for them and has worked in many cases for a long time. We understand that. But you know, taking a 5 to 10 year view, you'd think that we'll start later and attract more staff. And it's important to remember that, like many sports, these hours started when there was no money in racing. And so these were hours that were dictated by having to go to a day job. There's so much money in racing now, and it's so professional in stables. Not all stables, obviously, but certainly the big ones are, you know, big operations. That is their day job. And so there's the need to do your training and then go to your day job is dissipated when that in fact is the job.
So we're not going to see any reduction in night racing or twilight racing moving forward. Is there how many night meetings and twilight meetings do we have now, and could there be any increase with Caulfield coming online soon, their new track?
Yeah, in round numbers, it's about 10% of our racing is night and twilight. I think it might be 9% night and 3% twilight. You know, our view is in warmer months with more daylight, we'll end up probably Wednesday twilight, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday, Sunday day. Maybe some Saturday nights in certain times of the year, TBC. You'd expect, you know, we'd regulate maybe riding. You'd probably have to pick and choose between the day and the night meeting. That one's very much TBC. And to the extent that rest is needed for the industry, then you take those breaks earlier in the week, so on a Monday or a Tuesday.
So we'd have, you know, a race-free meeting maybe every week?
Potentially, and this is spitballing, that's a long way from a proposal, but logically, if you're going to put the show on later in the week and later in the day, and people say, look, we support racing when fans want to watch, but we do need a break, you say, no problem, I take a break when the least people are watching, which is during the day, Monday and Tuesday. And then, you know, I think we might even end up with a shape where your jump outs come forward, you jump out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, maybe Thursday, leave Friday mornings free, and then focus on racing Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday, etc.
I suppose stables will say, what about the staff? The horses still need to be fed, they still need to be worked, even if we're not racing on these days. And there are a lot of stables that don't have different shift workers and numbers of staff that can do a late Friday night and be back at work on the Saturday.
Yeah, and those are issues that we need to work through, obviously. But again, my hypothesis, I guess, coming from quote-unquote the outside, is that the challenge is to get staff that want to work that early, not staff who want to work a little bit later.
Just a snapshot, crowds, figures of the Festival of Racing, where did they sit with pre-COVID levels?
Yeah, crowds were very healthy. I confess I don't know the crowds across all tracks, but certainly the extra day at Flemington was a big success. It was well received by the VRC. They had near enough to 50,000 across the 4 days, and that's very quickly becoming, I guess, the second leg of their fan-facing racing strategy. Obviously, they've got the Melbourne Cup Carnival, but their Autumn Carnival, I think, is now become an area of focus for them. The numbers were pretty healthy, and they were good events.
Were the numbers healthy enough to mean that Sandown gets more feature races moving forward? I know the MRC put out some stats saying that there was a large differential between Caulfield and Sandown, but there's a lot of industry feedback about the popularity of Sandown and feature race days.
Our preference is to race at Caulfield rather than Sandown. It's easier for more fans to get to Caulfield than it is to Sandown, and it's more popular with punters. It's a better known track for punters than Sandown, and therefore generates more revenue, which generates more income from everyone. That said, Sandown's obviously a very fair racing track, and so it's popular with participants for that reason. Is it as good as Caulfield and Flemington and Moonee Valley as a spectator facility? Probably not.
Just on Caulfield, the new inner track, is redevelopment on track for the reopening? And with the want for night racing at Caulfield, has there been a certain time locked in for night racing on this new inner track?
No, we haven't got into that detail. You'd think it'll have a key role to play when Moonee Valley closes for a couple of years. That's an obvious thing to do, is to port some of those races over to Caulfield. Once the lights are in, then we'll have options at Moonee Valley, Caulfield, Cranbourne and Pakenham for night racing. So it's really about making sure that we've got a schedule that works for fans across Thursday nights and Friday nights, and as I say, maybe the odd Saturday night over the summer period, plus spring and autumn either side.
Quick break. Andrew Jones is in the studio on the other side. I'll ask you about the wagering landscape, what's going on with the licence, Entain buying New Zealand Tab overnight, and we'll also speak about this big parcel of land, the redevelopment, what's happening there. Welcome back to Racing Pulse. Got Racing Victoria's CEO Andrew Jones in the studio. Andrew, on Saturday morning, I think it was, Dan Bowman was talking with the guys about the proliferation of night racing over in the West, the Pakenham, Cranbourne, when Caulfield starts and even Moonee Valley. It's difficult to get to for a lot of percentage of trainers, especially those on the eastern side. Do you look at that, especially with the way traffic is at the moment? It's gridlock trying to get to Pakenham and even Cranbourne. Is there a view for the future that if you were going to persist with night racing or increase it, maybe Geelong or those tracks on the other side could be developed?
It's certainly a consideration. We're very mindful that the horse populations are distributed across various centres in Victoria, and the biggest are in the southeast, with Cranbourne and Pakenham, and then I guess Flemington in there as well, which is in the northwest. But we are mindful of the need of trainers from Geelong, for example, or Warrnambool or Ballarat, being able to have reasonable access to night racing for their horses and their owners. So we'd be open to a discussion on lights at Geelong. The challenge is the cost of putting lights in, and then how often You're going to use them, but it's certainly a reasonable question for Dan to ask.
And that big parcel of land which is out that side near the airport, I know a green paper was done yesterday, industry ideas. What's the vision for that?
We're not sure yet. We're working through various options for it. It could be anything from a vacant field that's getting a little bit more valuable every year to an all-singing, all-dancing, racing, training, education centre for the industry. So we're going through that concept planning process this calendar year. And some of the variables include what happens with Sandown and what happens with training at Flemington. If those two things stay, then there's less need for new stuff at Northwest. If those things don't stay, then there is potentially a need for new stuff at Northwest. So we don't have a fixed view. It's about developing options and making sure that we manage our infrastructure investment responsibly across the metropolitan Melbourne network. And not taking a club view on it, just taking an infrastructure network view of it.
Is there a timeline? I think they've just announced, was it another 5 years training at Flemington? What's the timeline for training there at the moment?
That's a good question. I think they gave a 10-year guarantee maybe 3 years ago, so it's 5 to 7. They're in the final stages of developing a master plan, which we'll get a look at in the next few weeks. That'll be another important input, and then the Sandown planning process is underway, and obviously that's a hot topic for the MRC.
Yeah, and personally, from the Racing Victoria point of view, would you like to see that Sandown be retained, but maybe some of the land carved off for development there?
Look, my view is just work out what the best answer is for the industry, and that depends a little bit on the numbers. Depends a lot on the numbers, and then it depends on accommodating the racing capacity either at Sandown or somewhere else at a high quality track. Because the thing about Sandown is the shape and quality of the racetrack more than the facility itself. So, is the facility itself absolutely compelling to retain? Not necessarily. Is the racetrack a really good racetrack? For sure. So if there's a Sandown equivalent somewhere else, is that okay? You think, yeah, that's probably okay. And then the question is it a better use of money to sell Sandown and build a replica somewhere else, or is it a better use of money just to keep Sandown as it is?
Speaking of money, what's the latest with the wagering deal? We saw Entain buy New Zealand Tab pending government approval. Is that a positive with the licence renewal up here in Victoria?
Yeah, the licence process is run by the Victorian government, not Racing Victoria, and we're very much at arm's length from that, and the probity requirements are very, very strict from the government. So all we know is that it's grinding into gear sort of post-election, post-Christmas, which we're excited about. We expect it'll play out over the next 3 to 6 months. The government sort of signalled quarter three, which I think would be good because that takes us to just about a year to expire of the current agreement, and we need some time to transition out of the current joint venture. As for who the interested parties are, I couldn't tell you because we don't get a look at that. But obviously, from an industry point of view, competition is healthy.
New South Wales, how are relations with our friends going at the moment? How's the legal case? Is there any update?
The legal case, I think it'll be heard around May the 4th, Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you.
It's also Warrnambool, it's Grand Annual Day.
Yeah, look, we had a Racing Australia board meeting last week. It was, a reasonable meeting, but it is challenging when one PRA is taking legal action against the other five. It doesn't do much for goodwill.
Was anything ratified at that meeting?
I won't talk through the details of the meeting, but as I say, it's the right answer for racing is a productive Racing Australia with a clear strategy and motivated staff taking the organisation and the industry forward, and that's what we're aiming to achieve.
There is another big story which is currently emanating with a trainer in New South Wales that was based here in Victoria, and that's the allegations with Gerald Ryan. I know there's a lot of industry people that are affected by this and long-term scars because of this. What's the Racing Victoria viewpoint on Gerald Ryan and the situation?
Yeah, Yeah, this is a challenging topic, obviously, and we haven't discussed it at board level. But you know, my view on this matter and any matter of that nature is that justice must be done, and what that means is depends on the facts of the matter as found by you know. People who are qualified to investigate them, and then going through a proper judicial or quasi-judicial process. So we'll be guided by what the police find, or what IREC finds, or what have you. Complainants, I guess, are entitled to be heard, and as is the person who's being complained about.
With the allegations that have been levelled, is there any consideration from Racing Victoria about restricting Gerald Ryan from running horses in Victoria?
We haven't discussed that. I think you know there's two views on these processes. Just setting this particular one aside, one is innocent till proven guilty, and the other is. To sort of stand down until it's decided. I think the present position is we'll respond to findings rather than allegations, but we'll let you know if that changes.
Andrew, appreciate your time in the studio this morning after a successful festival of racing. Plenty to talk about, as always, and appreciate your availability.
No worries. Happy to be here. Thank you.
Andrew Jones, the CEO. We're a little bit late, Johnny. Sorry.